This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, that's right. You are listening to Fender Bender on at Joy 94.9. Tim Nicholson and Mike Costello here with you for the next hour. We're talking cars, we're talking motoring, we're getting very, very, very revved up for our weekends, and we hope you can join us. We've got lots to talk about, including the new Toyota Camry. Don't get too excited, we've got heaps more coming up. My name is Tim Nicholson, by the way. This is a motoring show called Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. And I am here with the lovely Mike Costello. Hi, Mike Costello.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, you know, mate, I'm enjoying a welcome dose of sunshine. It's the first time I've seen it in about 4 weeks. I don't really know what it is anymore.
It's a bit like that, isn't it? Mm. It is absolutely stunning outside in Melbourne, which is all too rare, but we are enjoying it all the same. Perfect day for a drive, you might say. Perfect day to get out, you know, get out of the city.
We need to work on doing that broadcast from a car.
You know, I think that, yeah. I don't know
how technically feasible it would be.
An outside broadcast from a car is something that I am always going to favour, believe you me. But how have you been? Have you had a good week?
I've had a pretty okay week. See, I made the big, colossal mistake of doing my first ever personal training session yesterday, which, if you know me, you know, isn't really me, a me kind of thing to do. And I feel like I've been manhandled by a gorilla.
But not in a good way.
I can't really move or walk or really do anything beyond shuffling like a zombie. So I'm sort of regretting things. I'm sure in the long run it will pay off. But
is it everybody shuffling like that Red Foo song? Or nothing
My
like
favourite
that
song,
well,
you know too well.
You had that look about you, that kind of I like Red Foo look. No,
it's
I'm
the most
kidding.
Horrible thing you've ever seen.
It is awful. Well, you're much better than me because I will tell you what, I did not go anywhere near the gymnasium this morning, which is very, very bad. But I'm sure people will cope and they won't recoil in horror when they look at me. Now, it's been a busy week. There's been a lot happening. A very significant launch this week that you attended, Mike. We'll be talking about later. Now, you are giggling at this launch.
Yeah, well, I've made fun of this car in the past, so I feel slightly conflicted. Anyway, we'll get there.
We will. We are talking, of course, about the Toyota Camry.
But not the Camry as you know it.
No.
Toyota's made a bit of a change to the dear old Camry.
Yep.
He's hoping it'll get people to think about it differently, but we'll see. In the fullness of time.
We will. We will see very, very soon. And we'll be talking about a few other things. Speaking of sexy, like Camry is sexy, we're going to talk about the budget as well.
You're really exciting me, Tim.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. It's going to be one of those. No, we are going to talk about some other very exciting
things. I think Tony managed to avoid, you know, annoying everybody quite. He didn't do quite as annoying a job of it this year as perhaps as he did last year.
Exactly. Mm. That's true. Do we blame him or do we blame Joe?
I don't know.
It's kind of a combination of the
you
two.
You really got to blame the guy at the top, don't you?
Yeah, I like to blame Matthias Cormann just because I like to hear him talk all the time. He's so good. But now, starting with a bit of brief news for Fender Bender today. A few things this week. We've heard that Toyota and Mazda are BFFs now. What's going on?
It's this weird thing that's happening in the world of cars where a lot of big brands that you would think would generally be rivals to each other are actually teaming up and co-developing things and saying, hey, you know, we could use your help on something that we need that you're particularly good at and vice versa. It's this symbiotic thing. We saw it with Renault and Nissan. We've seen it with Mercedes kind of joining in and making an automotive menage a trois. I'm quite proud of that one. And now we have the two biggest brands in Australia, Mazda and Toyota, in terms of sales. Mazda not so big globally as Toyota, but globally they've teamed up. They've been doing this for a while. They've done a couple of projects together in America. Toyota's little American youth brand Scion rebadges the Mazda 2, for instance. But they signed an agreement during the week that really said they were going to expand this partnership in a big, big way.
Yeah.
It really gives rise to a bunch of speculation. Now, typically,
shall we speculate wildly?
Exactly, kind of have to. I mean, obviously, they weren't that forthcoming about all their plans. They're not going to, you know, reveal every secret they're working on. But it gives some intriguing insights into what the two brands could do together.
Yeah.
The one that...
Yeah.
The one that really struck me is the fact that Toyota doesn't have a tiny little SUV. It's one of the few brands that doesn't offer one. And of course, Mazda just released its really nice CX-3 mini urban crossover. So you start to think, could we see a Toyota version of that?
Feasible? Well, they've got to do something along those lines, don't they?
Mm, or what about a Mazda badge Toyota 86?
Ooh.
Well, I don't know. I suppose they've got the MX-5.
I was going to say, do they need that? Mm. Even like bigger, like, you know, Toyota's big in four-wheel drives, like bigger four-wheel drives and that kind of thing. You know, I wonder whether Mazda would bother kind of going
into
that.
A Mazda Prado?
Well, why not?
Who knows?
They've got the next CX-9s coming at some point soon, and maybe they need to go bigger than that.
Mazda Kluger. It is interesting, though, as part of a wider thing that, you know, you're seeing this happening more and more and more. A lot of people for a long time have predicted that at some point in the distant, murky future, there might only be five car brands because they would just subsume all the other brands and it would just be like Volkswagen, Toyota, you know, maybe Mercedes left. And, you know, the fact that more and more brands are teaming up in this way, brands that would once have been sworn rivals, is pretty interesting. And
I think it makes sense for those two as well, though. Like you hear of, you know, I think Toyota and BMW have hooked up to make potentially a sports
Toyota's
car.
Toyota's really just kind of... Well, I don't know how to say it nicely, Toyota, but it's getting around.
It is getting around, but which is interesting because they're pretty profitable. So it's not like they need help.
Maybe that's why they just outsource everything to other companies.
Good point.
Toyota's teaming up with BMW. It's teaming up with Mazda. You know, who next?
Well, the other thing is, it's interesting talking about this because old mate Sergio Marchionne, who is the CEO or whatever you want to call it, or president of the Fiat Chrysler Automobiles Group or whatever it's called now. So he is like desperately courting people. He's out and about.
He is the best, Sergio. Every time,
funny.
As a car journo, Sergio is a gift because generally CEOs are quite reserved. They don't want to talk too much. Obviously, they don't want to reveal big secrets. Sergio doesn't give a damn.
No.
He just says whatever the hell he wants to say.
He gets out
quite often. It's hilarious and it makes fantastic copy. And you're right. He's been out there on the hustings saying,
seriously?
Hey, guys, we've got to team up.
Yeah.
But it's probably because Fiat Chrysler doesn't have a lot of money at the moment and can't afford to make its things. And he looks at profitable companies and says, hey, you want to...
Yeah.
You know,
but he's going to everyone. It's not like he's being fussy.
He's shameless.
He really is.
He should talk to Toyota. Apparently, Toyota's pretty shameless as well.
This is the thing. This is the thing. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of their hookup, and we will keep our eyes peeled. Other rumour, well, not rumour, this is... this one is a rumour, rather, is BMW, speaking of, reportedly working on a sexy, hot M3 version of the 3 Series Touring, the wagon.
An M3 wagon. It's an interesting point. I've never really considered it before, but Mercedes does a C63 wagon, Audi does an RS4 wagon.
Yep.
Why the hell doesn't BMW have an M3 wagon?
Look, and it's interesting because I just yesterday I saw a 3 Series, it must have been one of the kind of higher spec 3 Series Tourings, the current generation one, near my work, and it was that stunning blue, I don't know how to describe it, it's that BMW blue, they're the only ones that do it.
Mm.
You see it a lot in their kind of M products, and it is just gorgeous, and I was like, God, why don't they do an M3? And then bang, this morning, obviously the higher powers heard my thoughts and they have decided.
You have a direct line to Norbert Reifhoffer. Yeah. Look, it's
a
very interesting point. And there was a report this morning saying that, you know, one of those typical reports, somebody heard from somewhere down the line that quite often do turn out to be true.
Mm.
Leaks happen inside car companies all the time, that they're working on it. And it would make a whole lot of sense. Now, whether it's the next gen car or the current gen car, it'd probably be the next generation car at this point.
Yeah.
But still, you know, the hot wagon. I think the wagon's kind of making a bit of a comeback anyway.
Oh, God, yeah. And I love it.
You know,
so
everyone's
much.
Going into SUVs now that. You know, there's kind of a cool niche appeal to a wagon and a sports wagon even more so.
Look, and that as those aforementioned ones as well as something like the Skoda Octavia RS, like, that is these are my favourite cars. Like,
you're a bit of a Skoda guy.
Well, a little bit. I'm
you're
a
definitely
bit
a target
guy.
Too. Like, you live in, you know, the inner city and you know, you're sort of a bit of a lefty and all that kind of stuff. That's what Skoda wants.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's happening. Oh, God, it's true. I'm a cliche. Now, other rumours, though, this is an interesting one. Jeep are looking to go high-end.
Well, this is tying back to Sergio Marchionne, who we spoke about before. He was talking to an organisation this week, and he, you know, again, in typical Sergio fashion, didn't hold back or didn't hide things. He said outright, it makes me physically ill when I see a Range Rover, and I know that we don't do one at Jeep.
Wow.
You know, it makes my blood boil, I think was the quote that he actually used, which is quite interesting and passionate. And obviously, Jeep, being one of the world's preeminent SUV brands, has decided, hey, why the hell does Range Rover have this dominance over the ultra-high-end SUV space and we don't have any presence there? But to imagine a Jeep, which currently tops out at about $80,000, going into $150,000, $200,000 territory, it's a huge step.
Is anyone going to pay that amount of money for a Jeep? Well, I mean,
the Jeep brand is a great brand. Yeah, it's a well-known brand. But, yeah, does it have the cachet of a Range Rover or of a Mercedes or an Audi, any of those companies? Obviously, Sergio thinks that they do.
Yeah. It's interesting because, yeah, you get to that point. It's, you know, I guess the thing that Hyundai had where people are willing to pay a certain amount of money for a Hyundai, then they bring in something like the, I keep going to call it the Grandeur, but it's the Genesis. I've got to stop doing that. I know. I've got to
remember
stop
that. The Hyundai Grandeur?
Yeah, sadly, yeah. I do. Text in if you remember the Hyundai Grandeur.
Or if you have a Hyundai Grandeur, I would love to hear from you.
We want to know if they still exist. That is 0427 joy949 or email onair at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you anyway. If you've just got something to say, you want to say hi, any of that kind of stuff, let us know how you're going, basically. We just want to hear from you. Now, some other, going back to Mazda very briefly as well, I believe the MX-5 is going to be here imminently.
The new MX-5, the subject of the world's longest ever promotional campaign. Mm. It seems we've been hearing about this car as coming soon for far too long for a car to have been coming soon at all. Yeah. But it is going to be here in August, thankfully. It's going to be a lot cheaper than the current car. We're reckoning maybe about 35K potentially as a starting price, taking it back to its roots in 1989 when it revolutionised small convertibles as we know it. It's going to be smaller. It's going to be lighter. It's going to be all the things that you want an MX-5 to be. It's like the current MX-5 is kind of a bit like Led Zeppelin got towards the end, a bit bloated, was once great, getting a bit out of hand. And the new MX-5 is a bit like the punk rock that came after it and just, you know, whittled it down to size once again. That's the kind of illusion that I'm drawing. I don't know whether it's accurate or not, but I'm going to roll with it.
We'll go with it.
And
with
it. The ones that are destined for Australia have just rolled off the production line in Hiroshima, so they're coming here very soon. It's kind of exciting. It's a tangible look at the first ones that we're going to get. So, exciting for all those MX-5 fans out there.
But speaking of those, like, they're going to go for this car regardless of what happens, let's be honest. But what about the youth? Will the youth go for it?
Well, I think that's kind of Mazda's plan because the current one is way too expensive and they're just not getting the kind of, you know, penetration of the market that they want.
Yeah.
Pardon my use of
You
word.
Said penetration.
I did. But, you know, look, they're going to have to do better with it. And look, cars like the Toyota 86 have shown car companies that, you know, young people do want to buy sports cars. There are still people out there that are interested in cheap sports cars. Yep. So, you know, they'll be definitely trying.
It's very interesting to see. And I can't wait to get behind the wheel of that thing. By the way, I'm very excited. That's right. You are listening to Joy 94.9, and the show you're listening to is Fender Bender, which is obviously the best motoring show that you can possibly imagine. We are very happy to... I don't know what I'm going on about here. I'm here with Mike Costello. We are talking cars. We're talking lots of different things. Now, very briefly, Mike, as well, just on some local news, we were talking before the show about ANCAP, the crash safety body. So what are they harping on about now?
Well, you know, ANCAP's kind of interesting at the moment, isn't it? Because with the Australian automotive manufacturing landscape going to, you know, on a course for change in 2017 when all the factories close, a lot of people are asking, why is ANCAP still going to be, you know, an organisation? I mean, do we need it? Mm. If every car we get's imported from somewhere else, do we need an organisation crashing and testing cars in Australia?
Yeah.
And you've noticed a distinct increase in ANCAP's presence in acting as a kind of lobby group for various safety bodies. It's really putting itself out there in the public eye more, I guess, to kind of come up with another avenue that it can explore to justify its future. That's my take on it anyway. And one thing it did during the week was it once again called for the standardisation of AEB, autonomous emergency braking.
They've been big on this one.
That's a system that increasingly cars in Europe especially are getting, but in Australia as well. And it used to be on only high-end vehicles, but now very affordable vehicles such as the Volkswagen Up have a version. It's a system that uses sensors at the front of the car, and it detects when you're fast approaching an object in front and destined for a rear-end collision. If the driver doesn't brake, it automatically brakes the car and prevents anything from happening in front. And it works a charm. I've tried it on a number of cars. It really does the job.
Yep.
And obviously, you can see the benefits of this. You know, a thing that stops you from hitting a car in front is always going to be a good thing. And, you know, the fact that it's been on cars like a Volkswagen Up for $14,000, you do have to wonder why it's not standard on all cars. And you also have to wonder what, you know, is this the next, you know, ABS brakes? Is it the next airbag? Is it the next stability control? Is it the next system that becomes just de rigueur and, you know, is a given to be fitted to all vehicles?
Yeah.
And if so, when will that be?
Mm-hmm.
And this all began when ANCAP co-funded and co-did a study that was released during the week that found that AEB reduces collisions by 40%.
Right.
Or rear-end collisions by 40%.
Yeah.
They've been a bit vague on the exact details of sample sizes and things like that, but nevertheless, it's a pretty damning study for those who would say that AEB probably shouldn't be standard yet. And, you know, I guess the time is probably right for car makers to start fitting it to more of their vehicles, you'd have to say.
Look, it's interesting because I saw an article during the week talk kind of similar theme to this, looking at people in traffic and how everyone who's sitting in, not everyone, I shouldn't say that, but so many people sitting in traffic are sitting there looking at their smartphones and the car moves ahead.
Tinder on your way to the office. I'm swiping right.
Not speaking for, experience.
Just, just swiped right and suddenly I've hit a guy in front.
Exactly.
You know? I've never done that, by the way.
No.
Never.
Exactly. You swipe and
don't Tinder and drive.
No.
Right?
Exactly. But you know what? It's so common. And if you look at the traffic, I'm on Punt Road every day and every night.
My condolences.
Tell me about it. Wow. It's awful. But especially at night, you sit there and you look around and there's only ever one person in every car and I would say 60% of them are looking down at their thing. Mm-hmm. Now...
Oh, looking down at... Do you want to
sorry, looking down at their phone, their smartphone. But it's hard. And I know we've talked about this on the show before, but it's... I don't know if that behaviour is going to stop. So it's fine to say, you know, I think we spoke previously about a top traffic cop in Victoria saying, you know, we need to put the phones in the boots. It's just not going to happen. No one's going to put their phone in the boot of a car. It's I think we need to manage... this kind of what's happening anyway. I don't think it's going to go back and people are just not going to look at their phone when they're driving. So we're going to have to, technology has to adapt to it. So stuff like this, emergency autonomous braking, is going to stop all, you know, those kind of in traffic minor bingles.
It's really interesting you bring up the phone in the boot thing, because during the week I actually got to have my first go at Apple CarPlay.
Oh yeah.
And of course there's an Android version as well, and it's slowly trickling into Australia. It's, as always, things take too long to get to Australia, and it's already around in Europe, but it's going to be here within a few months.
Yeah.
And you already can get it on aftermarket systems, but that's a system that basically turns your car's screen into your smartphone. It's just a mirroring thing basically, and I think things like that will help.
Okay.
Because rather than looking down at your lap, at your phone, you're sort of looking at the fascia. Maybe that will help. But, you know, any system of automation that can stop, you know, even if it stops one accident.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a whole bunch of areas that'll affect insurance premiums and all sorts of things down the line. But, you know, I think for once I actually do agree with ANCAP. Often I think ANCAP, you know, sometimes I'm confused by what it's trying to do. But I think in this case,
they've got it right.
It's making a good call.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll have to see what happens. As you say, you know, anything that kind of stops those accidents is a positive for us, we suggest.
Unless you're a panel beater, in which case, I'm sorry.
Bring it on. Bring it on. Mm-hmm. Now, Mike, continuing the sexy theme of today, we are talking federal budget.
Isn't it funny, like, after last year's budget, where it was just chaos, you know, hockey and Cormann and Abbott.
There was blood everywhere.
Wow. You know, it was carnage. Everybody was up in arms, seemingly. This year was very subdued. Yep. It was almost the budget of, you know, the Liberal Party saying, hey, just, you know, just forget last year happened and we can just move forward.
Look how nice we're being to people.
Yeah. not quite as nice as you might think if you delve into it, but nevertheless, certainly not as damaging, perhaps, as last year to a lot of people. Definitely the government saying to the middle ground, you know, that it still remembers the middle people rather than the people at the extremes.
That's it.
But in terms of automotive, perhaps not quite as big an impact again as last year.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. They've missed a big opportunity that a lot of bodies have been calling for, the abolition of the luxury car tax, which adds quite a lot of... Depending on...
Oh, they're not going to get rid of that.
Well, no,
they
make way too much money. Cash cow. It is bonkers. I didn't realise how much they made out of it, and it is extreme.
What they need to do is change the name from luxury car tax, because the biggest company hit by luxury car tax is Toyota. Toyota gets hit more than any other company because, you know, it's a tax that any car sold over 60, what's the threshold
I think
now?
I think it's about 60, something along those lines.
It changes, it's scaled every year. But any car above that, any additional cost on top of that is taxed at a high rate. So, you know, Prados and Land Cruisers and these sorts of cars are crazily expensive. And so while Mercedes gets hit and BMW gets hit, Toyota actually gets hit more, and you can't say that a Land Cruiser is a luxury car.
No.
So they need to change a name from luxury car to something else. But nevertheless, it's a very punitive tax.
Well, it's funny. It's just punishing people for, you know, wanting to be fancy. Is there anything wrong with that?
But, you know, they look at it and they say luxury car sales are still going through the roof. why would they stop it?
Well, exactly.
It's not like it's slowing things down at all.
But the argument is, why are they not taxing like yachts and, you know, high-end luxury goods that don't, you know...
A yacht tax. I like it.
Well, it probably wouldn't really net a lot of money.
Sales?
No, that's the thing. I don't think there are. But that's, you know, the argument a lot of the automotive bodies that are really against this, and I would suggest some of the car makers that hate it as well. But they didn't get rid of that at all. There is now a new tax deductible thing for small businesses. If you're buying any kind of asset up to up to $20,000, there's some tax incentives there for them. So a lot of this is Tony's Tradies we keep hearing about, which... I like the second word in that little phrase.
Big fan of tradies, aren't
big
you?
Big fan of tradies.
Yeah.
So they'll benefit from buying something new, like, you know, some kind of driveway deal for a use, which
you can get like a Renault Kangoo van, or you can get an entry drive or something for $20,000. So away you go.
You can also get a Mahindra pickup.
Yes, you can.
Or a ZX Grand Tiger.
I've
actually taken
a Mahindra pickup off road, and those things are tough.
Really?
Oh yeah.
They're the ones that are farm vehicles, is that
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And they outwardly say that, the company,
of
like, that is an agricultural vehicle.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, look, I mean, there's good and, well, not bad, but, look, nothing happened and then a couple of positives came out of it. So, it's a bit of a weird budget, automotive, from an automotive perspective.
Not the budget that we saw last year.
Not at all. But, again, you know what? I think a lot of people are probably reasonably happy about that. So, that is our budget. You know, our
we're the authority.
Little, exactly.
The
yeah.
Guardian can suck it. It's way better.
Lenore Taylor, what does she know? Anyway, we will continue this outrageously saucy conversation very, very soon. Again, if you've got anything to say, if you want to say hi, if you want to ask us any questions, we're always happy to help if you are in the market for a car. Or if you've got any questions about purchasing a vehicle, we can attempt to help you out. Please text in 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We have some knowledge that we can impart, but don't blame us if we stuff up. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Excuse me.
Tim's dying, everybody.
I am. I just had a sip of water just before I came back to air, and it went down the wrong way.
Good one.
I know. So I'm going to slowly die for a little while.
Are you all right?
I'm fine. I have it all the time. It's always more dramatic than it actually is. Now, Mike, you were just discussing in the break some controversial news about some road speed limits in Victoria.
Yeah, I heard this thing talked about during the week, and I went back and had a bit of a look, and I don't know how I missed it the first time around, but some roadworks are going to be done relatively soon on CityLink to the airport. The speed limit's going to be lowered to 80. When they're finished, it's not so much a road widening exercise, I understand. It's more just getting rid of the emergency lane instead.
Oh.
And as a result, they're proposing to set this speed limit to 80 up to Melrose Drive. So Melbourne locals who use CityLink to get to the airport, obviously at peak hour, that's a nightmare stretch of road, but it's generally, technically 100k an hour once you hit the Balti Bridge all the way through. And now there's a proposition to maybe drop that to 80 for the majority of that run-in, which makes absolutely zero sense.
That's weird, you know, isn't it?
Autostradas and autobahns in Europe with speed limits twice what ours are, and the roads are inferior to that road. Yeah. It's a world-class bit of road. There was a bit of a back down. It's now sort of, at first, the government seemed to come out quite strongly in favour of it, and it seems to have softened its stance. So who knows what will happen, but it does, for me, highlight this broader issue where, once again, you know, speed is a problem. Mm. Yes, going too fast is a problem. Going too quick for your abilities is an issue, but it's not really addressing the problem at its source, is it?
No.
And to say that, you know, driving at 80 on a road that good and that wide and that well-tended is the only safe speed to go is, frankly, incorrect.
Are they saying that, is that their excuse, that it's a safety kind of measure?
Well, and also ostensibly to boost traffic flow, which again makes no sense because you're never going at 100 or 80 in peak hour. The fact is, to say that we can just slow people down again and again and again and again to make things safer is far more difficult in the long run than just improving driving standards.
Yeah.
Because driving at 100 is not, by world standards, fast at all.
No.
In fact, it's one of the slowest freeway speed limits anywhere in the developed world.
Yeah.
And dropping it further still is, in my opinion, odd, to say the least.
It's funny because it's a very Melbourne thing as well. Like, I know there are a few freeways that we've got that are 110, but there are others, such as the Calder, for those drivers who head north or northwest of an evening, beyond near the airport somewhere. It's 80 for I don't know how many Ks, but until you get to Calder Park Raceway,
yeah,
it's 80 kilometres an hour for a reason that I am still unsure of.
And the other part of the equation is, of course, in Victoria, is one of the only places in the world where going 3 kilometres an hour over the speed limit gets you fined.
Yeah.
In most places, it's 10%. And that's logical, because going 3 Ks an hour over is not as big a deal.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't deserve a $200 fine, in my opinion, which is, I received one for doing 3Ks an hour over recently.
Oh,
so
dear.
I have
a little bit of anger
well,
there.
Well, maybe, but, you know, it's odd. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, having driven on roads in a number of places around the world where the speed limits are much higher and seeing how there isn't carnage and the road toll isn't higher, it's not to say that, you know, driving stupidly fast is safe, but, you know, the notion that CityLink should be 80 is
a little bit crazy.
Kooky.
A little bit cray-cray. Mm-hmm. Now, Mike, earlier we were talking about tradies, one of my favourite topics, and we were talking about, obviously, the tax deductions that are available for purchasing an asset under $20,000.
You're countering something a little dull with something a little exciting.
Oh, look, just trying to source it up a little. Now, another ute that is probably not going to fit into that little, I don't know, segment or whatever, that kind of entry-level boggo ute is the big Hilux, which is still one of the most popular vehicles on our road. And there's a new one coming, I believe.
There is a new one coming. The current one's getting on a bit. And the current one doesn't really dominate as much as it did at one time. Cars like the Ford Ranger and the Nissan Navara are really, and the Mitsubishi Triton especially, are eating into that car's lead.
Yeah.
And Toyota, in response, is preparing a new generation one to launch soon. It's not actually arriving on sale until the fourth quarter of this year. However, they're going to show it to us this week, because it's going to make its world premiere in Thailand, which is where it's built. We're going to see it locally in Australia at the same time. And, you know, it is a massive deal, because it's the biggest selling commercial vehicle, the biggest selling 4x4, at times the biggest selling vehicle of any sort in Australia. And, you know, it might not seem that exciting, but to people who work trade jobs and people who like to go camping and fishing on the weekends, it's the most bought car.
So
it's
right.
a big, big deal.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, during the week, I had the pleasure of having a chat to the boss of Toyota Australia's sales and marketing team.
Yep.
And he said that, you know, the supply of this one might not be quite as good as Toyota wants it to be.
Why is that?
Just massive global demand. They can't make enough. So we're looking at a situation now where this amazing new Hilux is around the corner, you know, and I've seen the leaked pictures. They're all out there. It looks really good. It looks like a massive step up on the current car, as it has to be, by the way. And they're not going to get their hands on as many as they want.
Which is going to be a bit, that's going to be really interesting. Because,
I'm sure Ford's happy to hear it.
Well, this is the thing, because in a couple of months we're going to see the refreshed midlife update for the Ranger, which is a terrific ute. I think it's one of the best
and
out
it's
there.
It's really interesting, because these are cars coming, they're coming with some really high-end features now. It's not,
yeah.
The days of utes being, you know, short of passenger cars in terms of safety are over. You know, it's not just the fact they're getting airbags and 5-star ANCAPs, but it's active safety technologies that 5 years ago were the province of high-end luxury cars that are now filtering down to utes.
Which is great.
And it's, you know, all these features are basically a response to the fact that people are buying dual cab utes not just for work vehicles, but they're almost family cars. You know, on the during the week, you shuttle your tradie mates around, and you do your job, and on the weekends, you put the child seats in the back and go out on a family adventure. Those cars are becoming family cars.
My brother just had his third child. They got a Triton.
Yeah.
That's the family car.
So utes are changing. They're not what they were. And companies like Toyota are getting on the ball and responding to that. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the company conjures.
And I tell you what, next year is going to be fascinating to watch for nerds like us who like the sales data, because we've got Hilux coming, that Ranger on the way, and the Mitsubishi Triton just launched its new generation version, and the Navara is launching next month, I think, as well. The new Navara, which looks great. So
it happens.
It's exciting.
In waves, you know, like all car makers develop new models and then they run for between 7 and 10 years, and then another new one launches, and often they coincide.
Yeah.
We've seen it with mid-sized cars recently, and now we're seeing it with utes.
It's funny because it's the four biggest as well, though.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely spoiled for choice if you're a tradie at the moment.
Totally.
Once the new Hilux launches around September, October, then, you know, there's going to be a bigger range of brand new to the market utes, and all quite high tech, all 5-star ANCAP safety. I mean, I would suggest the Hilux would do that, considering the current one is as well.
Yeah.
All of them massive advances on what we once thought was a ute, even 5 years ago. You know, and I think it's one of the most fascinating areas of the market that isn't being talked about that much.
Yeah. And if you are a tradie out there that needs help buying a car, please
contact
Fender Bender. Yeah, exactly. Now, speaking of Toyota, we seem to be talking about Toyota quite coincidentally today, I assure you. But obviously, the big story for them this week is the new Camry that you keep laughing about, Mike. Now, it is a big launch. It's big also for Australia because this is the final Camry or the final Toyota ever to be built in this country, which is a little bit sad.
Look, this relaunched Camry during the week is a big deal for a lot of reasons. It arrives about 3.5 years after the new Camry was last launched, and generally car makers don't launch a new model, you know, ever more often than say 6 or 7 years apart. So to introduce a car that looks completely different and doesn't share any panels except for the roof only 3.5 years after its predecessor is almost unheard of. And the reason Toyota's done this is because it suddenly realized that around the world there are so many amazing mid-sized sedans on sale. And if the Camry wants to survive and thrive like it has been, it can't just rely on the fact that it's reliable anymore. So they've decided to sex it up. They've sexed up the Camry to a degree. Now, let's not get carried away. It's no Lamborghini Countach, but it's a lot better looking than the current or slash outgoing one was. Like I said, it shares only the roof panel with the previous car. It's the same underneath. It's ostensibly the same inside. So it is, you know, still a midlife update in most ways. But the other area where Toyota's been quite aggressive is sharpening its pencil. So it's dramatically slashed the pricing by up to $5,000. The entry one's now $27,000, or about 29 drive away. It's a hell of a lot of car for the money, and it's $4,000 to $5,000 cheaper than, say, a Mazda 6. So you're really seeing Toyota getting extremely aggressive. And the reason why it's ultimately doing this in Australia is because, as you said, they make the Camry here. They'll continue to make the Camry here until the end of 2017, and they will be, along with Holden, the final manufacturing presence in Australia to close. But between now and then, they have to make a certain amount to stay open, factory scale. You know, you have to churn out a certain amount of cars to stay viable, to stay in business. And the only way they're going to make enough to justify that is to make it so affordable and so decent to look at that people are still going to flock to it. Because for a long time, the only people that bought Camrys were fleets or taxis or anything like that. But that's not enough anymore. You have to go after, you know, individual people as well. And the only way to do that is to make it vaguely interesting. So it's all kind of tied into each other. But, you know, the fact that this is, you know, Toyota is going to make about 230,000 of these between now and the end of its factory life. It's going to export about 3/4 of those to Thailand, to the UAE, all around the world. It's a story that hasn't been told that much, you know. Holden and Ford barely export anything that they make here. Toyota exports the vast majority of what it makes here. And they're all Camrys. They're all world class. And, you know, yes, the Camry has a bit of a dull reputation, but it is kind of something to be proud of that we've made this incredibly reliable, you know, affordable, spacious car that gets sent all around the world. And, you know, now it actually looks kind of semi-decent. Which is a big step up.
Bit of praise there, Mike. Bit
Look,
of praise.
The reality about the Camry is, so yes, it looks better in your driveway. I guess the most important thing Toyota did in terms of underneath the skin on this car was the local development team, the local engineering team, which has 200 staff and is quite sizable and helps develop Toyotas all around the world and is based right here in Melbourne, made a sporty version. Now, let's slow down.
I'm sorry.
And just calm down. It's not a sporty, they're sporty and they're sporty, right? So it has the same engine, the little 2.5-litre four-pot, but they have, you know, put different dampers on it, different springs on it. They've put a faster steering rack in it. And all these things are designed to make a Camry that actually corners. And, you know, it kind of does.
Really?
It's let down by its engine a little bit, let down by the transmission a little bit. It's a little bit slurry, a little bit dopey and hesitant to kick down going into a corner more than you'd want it to. But the way that the body can, you know, it's got good body control, good handling, things that you would not normally associate with a Camry at all. It doesn't quite stack up to something like a Mazda 6 dynamically. It doesn't feel quite as premium inside, but it's spacious. It's really, really cheap compared to its rivals. And it's the homemade product. If you're a little bit patriotic, you're going to get behind that. So, you know, for once in my life, I experienced a day behind the wheel of a Camry and didn't fall asleep.
Well, that's good. But look, with that sporty version, I think it's called the SX, is that right? Which it sounds sexy in itself, I know, right? But do you think that's a bit of a missed opportunity there? If they've done that great work under the skin, but they haven't touched that engine, don't you think they maybe should chuck a turbo in there or tweak that engine somehow? And that could have been a real little variant.
It's all cost. You know, the company, it was amazing. You know, just to, you know, recalibrate the factory for 3 more years to make this car, because it looks so different, cost them $108 million.
Yeah, right.
There was about $25 million government dollars in that.
Yep.
The rest is all Toyota's money.
Mm.
So Toyota shelled out about $80 million bucks just to develop a car in a market that it's not going to develop cars in anymore or make cars in anymore.
Mm.
That's a massive spend, and kudos to Toyota for doing that.
Yeah.
You know, for keeping jobs here for three more years than it really necessarily perhaps would have wanted to.
Yeah.
And the notion of spending even more to whack a turbo onto it, as
maybe a bit too
great
much
as it would be. But, you know, it does get me thinking, how good would a turbocharged performance Camry be as like an unobtrusive sleeper?
That's the thing. Yeah, totally.
You rock up to the lights in your Camry and then just blow AMGs away.
Well,
there's a certain kind of attraction to that.
Do it, Toyota. And particularly with this market, who love that kind of, you know, off-the-line performance, I think that's a bit of a missed opportunity there. I think maybe next generation they might look at something like that.
Potentially. I mean, the real understated hero here, which doesn't get the local suspension tuning, unfortunately, is the hybrid Camry, which, again, is made in Australia, and it's the most high-tech car we make here by a country mile.
Yeah.
Petrol-electric hybrid goes really, really well.
Yeah.
It's got the electric motor that kicks in, helps out the petrol engine, gives it plenty of low-down torque, a decent CVT, which is incredibly rare.
Yeah.
CVT transmissions are normally pretty awful.
It's a smooth car.
Doesn't feel like
hybrid,
the clutch is slipping.
Yeah.
It's a really, really unheralded car once again. And, you know, I really have to applaud Toyota for spending the money that they've spent for a lost cause, essentially. We already know that it's closing, and yet it's spent the money anyway to make this Camry look better. Toyota itself admitted to me when I spoke to them this week that, you know, they were under pressure from within at one point from their Japanese head office to just keep churning out the old one. Because why spend $100 million to retool the factory when you're going to close? And Toyota had to fight tooth and nail to get it, and it did, and I congratulate them for doing so.
It was interesting because I went to there was a line-off ceremony that they had at their factory a few weeks back that I went to, and there's real... all of the manufacturing staff were there at this. It was like a media event showing the new Camry, the Australian-built version, and you could really feel the passion with the people there. They were all there. They were all taking photos. They're really passionate about what they do in that factory, and it is quite sad that obviously they're closing. But I imagine with the media launch in particular, last year I did the final Falcon launch, and there was real nostalgia there because it was the last ever Falcon. You know, there's a bit of emotion. The staff were emotional. It was all really interesting. The Camry's not... doesn't have that kind of emotional attachment that you have with the Commodore or the Falcon, does it?
And it's incredibly sad that that's the case because the Camry is way more important than either of those two.
Mm.
Toyota make more Camrys than either of those two by a long way, and they're the only one that exports en masse.
Mm.
So Toyota's by far the most significant player of any of the three local manufacturers.
Yeah.
Ford and Holden hog the limelight, and including from, you know, just journos like us, really, let's be honest about it. But the Toyota's more important, and...
Yeah.
You know, to see, I think the relatively classy way they've handled a tough situation and a bad situation for everybody. Nobody wanted this, and I don't think Toyota Australia wanted this, but they weren't given the choice, and they could have handled it a whole lot worse. So.
That's true. Well, there you go. That is the Toyota Camry review, guys. I need to towel myself down, quite frankly. So.
Don't worry. It still looks good with a crocheted rug and a bowls hat on the parcel shelf. Don't stress too much.
We're not going
wild here.
That's true. We've got lots more coming up around the corner, so make sure you stick around. This is Fender Bender. There is no autumn time sadness in this studio. Oh, that was bad. I'm really sorry, Mike. I tried to connect the song to us.
Look, you know, some segues work better than others, right? Hey?
Thank you for the encouragement. Now, we've been talking about Toyota a little bit today, but some not-so-great news during the week. Well, it's not great news, let's be honest.
Yeah, Toyota was affected, Nissan was affected. Honda will probably be affected, just hasn't confirmed how badly or so yet. But some of you may recall us talking in the past about the Takata airbag recall worldwide. Just to give you a bit of background, Takata makes about 20% of the world's airbags. It's a Japanese company. And it discovered that its airbags were prone to a problem. In other words, more specifically, the injector, the bit that propels the gas to expand the airbag, is prone to breaking. And if it breaks, it can cause shrapnel to go everywhere. And obviously, an airbag deploying with shrapnel can potentially be a lethal weapon.
Not amazing.
It's thought that about 7 people worldwide might have actually been killed by rogue airbags so far. They don't deploy themselves. It's only if you crash and the airbag deploys as it should that the problem can kick in.
Right.
It's hitting cars in Australia. And look, it's not the fault of the car makers because it's made by a third party and is just sold to the car makers.
Mm.
So you can't really blame Toyota and Nissan and Honda and any other company affected for this. It's not their doing.
Mm.
But it does show the fact that when you're a company that makes millions and millions and millions of things, if there's even a tiny problem, it can cause massive issues. Toyota recalled 181,000 cars this week. Nissan, a few less, but still over 100,000 of its own.
In Australia.
Mm-hmm. And these are cars built between about 03 and 07, round there.
Oh,
so they're going back a while, and it gets increasingly hard to track cars like that. And if you're an owner of one of those cars, you will be contacted.
Yeah.
The big issue here, though, for Toyota anyway, maybe not for Nissan, but for Toyota, is sourcing replacement parts out of Takata is difficult because Takata has to make millions and millions and millions of these replacement components.
Mm.
And it takes a long time to do that.
Yeah.
And so the replacement bits for Australia aren't going to get here probably until the beginning of 2016, which means if you're driving around in an affected vehicle with a potentially suspect airbag, you're going to have to drive around with that for another 6-7 months before you can get it fixed.
It's not ideal.
Which is incredibly concerning, and it causes you to have to think, if I was driving around in, say, a Corolla that was affected from that period, again, not the fault of Toyota, but if I was driving around in a car like that, would I want to drive a car with a potentially dodgy airbag?
No.
I don't know if I would.
No, that's the thing.
And, you know, we've seen 30 million General Motors vehicles recalled last year. The Takata recall is now 31 million units.
Yeah.
Increasingly, because of the fact that car makers are sharing components and because they're, you know, using the same things across a wide number of vehicles and even brands, we're seeing these enormous, enormous recalls. This is not the first and it will not be the last.
No.
And it's kind of the downside to what we've seen, you know, trend-wise in the automotive world recently.
A little bit controversial, but it's good. At least, you know, at least they're kind of working out what's happening and trying to fix it rather than kind of sweeping it under the rug, which may have happened in the past.
And if you're worried that you're affected and you drive a late model Toyota or Nissan vehicle from the early 2000s to the mid-2000s, contact the car maker, contact your dealer. They'll be able to give you all the information you need.
That's
not every vehicle is affected. And don't be angry at your car maker. It's not necessarily their fault on this occasion. But anyway,
yeah,
look into it.
It's a positive. Mm. That's true. Mike, we've got to go. We've got to go off air. Because the guys from Technogaze are coming up very, very soon, and they are settling in, they're getting ready, and you should all stick around and listen to them. So thank you, Mike Costello.
Always a pleasure.
We will be back next week on air on Joy 94.9. If you would like to find our podcast, go to joy.org.au. My name's Tim Nicholson, signing off for another week. Safe driving.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station.
See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.